The Sunday Show with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome to the Sunday Show. This evening we have a very special guest who has been called the First Lady of Musical Theatre here in Ireland, and I think probably globally. Rebecca Storm, you're very welcome to the Sunday Show. How are you?
Thank you very much, Ed. I'm grand. Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
It's all a pleasure. The first time I ever saw you was in the Cork Opera House in 1985, I think, when my mother brought me to see Blood Brothers. 86, was
it? Correct,
no
idea.
No, you're correct.
But, you know, I know those dates like the back of my hand. Yeah, 1986.
Well, I remember being absolutely, I mean, we used to go a lot. The Cork Opera House was a great old place, and they used to have the summer revels and lots of great shows there.
Yes. But Billy,
yeah, exactly, yeah. Paddy Comerford. Mm. But when I remember going to see Blood Brothers, it was just one of those. You left the Opera House, and you were like, I wouldn't say it was a goosebump, but incredible. And what an incredible musical that was. So now you're celebrating this year 50 years in the business. Is that correct?
Yes, I know. I couldn't believe it.
You look like about 40.
Keep talking. Yes,
you started young, but I mean that's incredible. I suppose you've become synonymous with Brothers. Now, we'll talk about a lot of the musicals and all the fabulous things you're doing now coming up. But first of all, a Yorkshire lass. You were born and bred in Yorkshire. Of course, that lovely accent.
How did I get into music? Well, I apparently, according to all sources from my family, I used to go down to the park and sit on the swing when I was about two and do an impression of the swing going, ma, 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 ma. And they didn't know what was going on. Then I was sitting in the high chair and I'd be going, boo, ba, ba. So I think they decided at two I was going to be a singer.
Wow.
And then I started earning a living when I was 16 years old. So that's why I'm celebrating 50 years, because I got my bus pass this year, Ed. I'm just letting your listeners into a little secret.
Brilliant, brilliant. You can't beat the old bus pass, Rebecca. It's always handy in an emergency.
I haven't been on a bus yet, but I'm planning it.
I mean, your first audition, I think, was in terms of the big time stuff when you hit the big time. I was reading one of your interviews there. You drove from your house to go to Manchester for an audition for Willie Russell's Blood Brothers.
Yes.
Isn't that correct? So that was very, very interesting. And when you got there, there was a big queue, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it was in the days of open auditions, which don't really exist anymore. I think apart from like the X Factor, you know, maybe you'd see them on the TV now. Thankfully, they weren't actually on the television when I was queuing up. But yeah, there were quite a lot of women not know what I was auditioning for, because I'd just seen this ad in the stage and television newspaper thing that it used to be around. I don't think it's there now, but on one of the back pages, and it said they wanted somebody 24 to 40. And I used to live in Huddersfield at the time. You know, I'd never auditioned for anything like that. I'd been sort of singing in cabaret, you know, type of thing. Supporting comedians, you know, like the likes of Bob Monkhouse and people like that, you know, I'd tour around theatres and things, supporting them. So it was my first audition, and I went in, I sang a couple of songs, and they were so sweet and so lovely. And they said, if we send you a script, and will you come and read? And I said, yeah. And they sent the script through. And my mother read it while I was out singing somewhere. And when I came back, she said, what part are they asking you to read for? And I said, I think it's the mother. And she just laughed out loud and said, you have no chance. You have no chance, lass. You know, are you joking? And I said, really, why? What? You know, she said, it's absolutely brilliant. But, you know, she's on practically every page. And I was very inexperienced at that stage. But anyway, flipping heck, I went and I read and I sang, and my life changed.
Willie Russell, he really wanted you for the part when he heard you. And makeup then went and did their thing, so to sort of age you up.
Well, I say that in my bio, actually. You know, I really did look old enough to have seven children when I was 23, Ed. You know, in that particular version, they kind of wanted it to look more 50s. And I think in the 50s, you know, women did look older. I'm sure your listeners won't mind me saying, you know, that the clothes and the makeup perhaps did.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I did look like my mother, you know, when I walked on the stage.
Aged, nobody looks their age anymore, I don't think, yeah.
No, and the funny thing is, this year I did it for my 39th year.
Wow.
So, of course, now, having played that role, I'm hoping to do it again next year so I can do that big round 4-0 celebration, you know. But the fact is now they're trying to make me look younger.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
because I look like the granny.
Well, it's not too much work to do there now, I have
Thank
to say,
very
being
much.
Very honest.
Keep talking.
Blood Brothers, Willie Russell, of course, famous, Rebecca, for, you know, educating Rita, you know, some amazing musicals
that
you
wrote.
Shirley
yeah.
Valentine, oh my God, who does, yeah. I mean, made into movies, of course, a lot of his stuff. What was it like working with Willie? Was that incredible?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Can't say any more than that. I spent about 3 years of my life, you know, working really quite closely. And I think the first song that you're going to play, Willie wrote, and that came out of Blood Brothers in 1984 when we did it. We opened it in the Nottingham Playhouse, and on the opening night we were in the foyer like you are, sort of celebrating the fact that it had gone so well, and like massive relief for me. And the producer of a TV series called Connie, which nobody had heard of because obviously it hadn't gone out at that stage, was chatting with Willie, and we was in a circle, and he literally said to Willie, you know, would you write us a theme song? And Willie said, well, yeah, sure. And then he turned to me and said, would you record it? It's like one of those moments in your life that you just think, did that really happen? Did that just
yeah.
happen? And then we went into the studio and we recorded it, and I went on Top of the Pops and I had a hit record.
Amazing. I mean, that was the Top of the Pops, like Mick Jagger was number one. And
absolutely.
What was that song again? What was your song there? It was called...
My song was Putting on the Show.
Yeah.
But Mick Jagger and David Bowie's song was Dancing in the Street. Yeah. But I mean, I was breathing the same air, man. I was breathing the same air.
But I mean, that program, that was just, that must have been incredible. Top of the Pops was just, that was the thing, wasn't it? That was the, you were at the pinnacle of it when you were on Top of the Pops.
Yes, yeah, I really felt like all my birthdays had come at once, yeah, because I, you know, I grew up with Top of the Pops. You know, I'm sure you probably did
as
well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Know,
I mean, you wouldn't miss it.
It was just their Thursday night, you know, it was that and then the Monkees. Or it might have been the Monkees and Top of the Pops. I can't quite remember. It was Thursday night. I used to get dressed up in my special miniskirt for the whole event. And so Top of the Pops for me from the age of about 6 or 7 was like, it, and to physically be in the studio and to, you know, I don't know, just
amazing.
To be part of all that was
huge.
And to see your record kind of going up the charts.
Yeah, of course, because you're like, you're shot into stardom. And then was that sort of life-changing, I suppose? You know, was it, or, wow, like everything just changes then?
Well, certainly the Blood Brothers thing changed everything, because it was like a little, it was just like steps, you know, this happens, then that door opens. So from Blood Brothers, then Bob Swash asked me to be Ava Perón in Evita, and from that, then Cameron McIntosh came up and said, will you be Fontaine in Les Mis? So because you're actually in a show, producers and directors have a chance to see you, and they go, oh, well, I think she might be okay for this. So it just opened a gorgeous box, you know, the chocolate box, actually,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And that was me for the next 15 years of my life.
And amazing. And aside from Top of the Pops, Rebecca, of course, a show that probably some people would say was on a par, the Late Late Show here in Ireland, right? Gay Byrne. Now, there's a lovely story where you came here, you had a production came to the Olympia, and it wasn't selling that well until Gay and Kathleen popped in to see you. And then, of course, you got onto the Late Late Show. So then you were an Irish star.
I had no idea that moment would change my life quite so much, genuinely. You know, obviously they wanted publicity. Pat Don had brought over, I'd been in Blood Brothers for the entire year of 84, and he came over to see it, I think, in the Empire in Liverpool. And he said, can I put a production on? But the production here was all Irish. So, you know, you had Brian Murray playing my son. And Paul Rayner, you know. So it was a whole new adventure for me. I'd never been to Ireland before, and I absolutely fell in love with everything about it and enjoyed the rehearsals, etc. But when we opened, they obviously have an invited audience on the press night, you know, to get things started. But Gay didn't come. Gay and Kathleen didn't arrive. Maybe they were on holiday or whatever. But we were empty for 2 weeks and it nearly closed. I mean, it was that close to closing. But word of mouth was creeping out that it was good. You know what it's like in Dublin and Ireland generally.
Yeah.
Word of mouth means absolutely everything. So Gay and Kathleen came along, and with that, we have to have on Friday night. So I literally came off the stage, they pulled off the microphone from me, I climbed in this big black limo. I had two guards on motorbikes at either side, and they whisked me through the streets the wrong way down to RTE. Yeah. And they took me into RTE, and there's Frank McNamara. He'd managed to get on the piano because he was the MD of Blood Brothers. He'd got onto the piano. I was in makeup. They were trying to make my face look halfway decent because I've been sobbing at the end of Blood Brothers, you know. And Gay Byrne is actually going on the air in front of the television. I think Rebecca's here. I won't try the Irish accent because I can't do it. I think she's here. She could be here. Are you here? And there I tootled through the studio, you know. It was, you know, and
like
it was
the president of, like the President of Ireland with the Guard of Honour. Wow, they were going to make sure you got there anyway.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was an amazing memory, you know. Yeah. It doesn't happen like that now, you know. Yeah. I go on my bike now to RTE.
That time, the lately, of course, you know, royalty. And was that an amazing experience for you?
Oh, unforgettable, as you can imagine it. That stayed, you know. I don't think I'll ever write my memoirs, but, you know, I'm telling you that because it's just a story that I treasure forever.
Yeah, and of course, when Gay gave you the seal of approval, because he loved the show, of course. He loved musicals, and that was it. It was just kind of a bit of a game changer, which was fabulous, wasn't it?
I had no idea how powerful Gay was, you know, but in that instance, I found out.
Yeah, and then that started, I suppose. So Ireland then became a place for you. And of course, it's your home for many, many years now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I went back to England, but then, you know, I did get, I kind of had that hankering to come back again. But then, you know, I did a Vita over here and then chess, you know, down as was the point, you know, now 03. So I was spending a lot of time sort of backwards and forwards doing different things. I did Hollywood Ladies over there at the Tivoli when that was in existence. And I just liked being here. You know, I'd been working in London so much, whereas here I felt like I had a balance of life somehow. You know, I had a home life and I had time to spend home life. So, yeah, Kenny and myself moved here in 99.
Rebecca, tell me, just for the, we were just going to say the music there.
Yeah, it's the song that Willie Russell wrote for me that was the theme from a TV series called Connie. Yeah, it took me into the charts, took me onto Top of the Pops. And the only sad part about it was Stephanie Beecham's photograph was on the front of my record, Ed.
Oh, is that
broke
Stephanie Beecham from the soap star on TV?
Was it? Exactly, because she was beautiful and glamorous and, you know, she was the star of the
Colby,
Connie series.
Colby Co or something. Yeah. Yeah.
Mine was on the back really tiny, you know, but hey, listen.
Well, brilliant. So,
who cares?
And brilliant. So, that's great. So, The Show is the name of the song, yeah?
Putting on the show or the show, yeah.
Trying to look like a
The Sunday Show with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to the Sunday Show. It's my very special guest, Rebecca Storm. That was a beautiful song, Rebecca. Really gorgeous. And of course, Top of the Pops. Shooting you into stardom. Yeah, as well as The Late Late Show, which we were talking earlier. I liked when you said there about your memoirs. I'd say it would be a great read. Are you going to refrain? Are you, too much kiss and tell, is it? Tell us some of the details.
I'm telling you them now, aren't I? No, I just wouldn't do it. I mean, I do love reading them, I have to say. You know, I love reading autobiographies or biographies. You know, I find people's lives fascinating, but mine's not fascinating enough to write about, no, truly. I mean, you know, I'm kind of a singer who's been in a few musicals, acting a bit, and I'm happy to have had 50 years on the stage, I have to say. But I'm telling you no more, Ed.
It's very interesting, Rebecca, though. I mean, your stamina must be incredible because, I mean, would you believe it? I did a little stint in the Everyman Theatre. I was the Prince of Denmark in Hans Christian Andersen. But after about 4 days, I was exhausted. But how do you do it? I mean, I know you haven't really gone down the TV or film route, and I'm sure you've had lots of opportunities, but you stayed really true to musical theatre. It's your real love, isn't it? The stamina is incredible, night after night, you know. You must be on a lot of vitamins, Rebecca. What's the secret?
I can't remember the name of the vitamin that I'm on, but I am on one, yes. Well, yeah, 8 shows a week. It's demand. Do you know, your life kind of goes, that's what you do. You know, there's very little else, especially as you get older, you know. I mean, I did used to go out. But that's why I used to like the kind of, you know, doing shorter runs of stuff, you know, because when I was in chess, for instance, I was in it for 2 years and some shows were 11 shows a week. You know, it's insane when you think back. I was about 30, I think, in those days, you know. But you're right, you know. I mean, all you do is kind of, you know, sort of eat as well as you can and warm up and exercise and go to bed.
Yeah.
Very boring. So I've nothing to write in my book.
I don't believe that for a second. Eva Perón, I mean, Les Mis, you made those your own. I mean, incredible performances that you did over the years. Did you love them all? Did you just, were some, like, did you say, like, some of them you just absolutely loved doing? You felt, because you really, you were the part in those musicals. I mean, it was incredible.
Well, I was thrilled to be offered a visa because I fell in love with Julie Covington's voice, like I think everybody did back in 70, whenever it was, 6 or 7. You know, she just took us all by surprise, didn't she? And so I found her a singing teacher and I bore a note in it because I just loved it. And I thought, for the first time, really, I think I found a kind of musical theatre sexy. You know, it wasn't Carousel, it wasn't Mary Poppins. You know, it was kind of rock stuff, you know, and I enjoyed learning that process. And so consequently, when I was offered the role, I absolutely loved it. I played it for 4.5 years, Ed. You know, in about 15 or 16 different countries. So at times it was exhausting. I mean, when I came here, maybe some of your listeners will remember, but I caught pneumonia. We were in Cork for 3 weeks. Down there, I caught pneumonia. So I came up here and I did the opening night and I collapsed. But the press had taken a photograph while we were doing the pre-run press photo shoot. My nose was like, it was like a bleached beacon, you know, and this storm gig blows cold. Thankfully, we'd sold out before we arrived. Otherwise, maybe we wouldn't have sold a ticket, you know, looking at my photograph. That was a complete sellout. And Les Mis was just a different story. I mean, in Evita, you're on stage all the time and it's, well, most of the time. Shay obviously is fantastic in that, you know. I've worked with so many brilliant Shays over the years, and that role is just phenomenal. But it was quite a shock when I went straight from Evita into Fontaine, who is, you know, they told me was the leading lady of Les Mis. Mm. And you get there and you realise that after 25 minutes, you're dead. You've gone, you know. And then you're in a dressing room for 3.5 hours and then you come back out at the end for a few seconds, you know, with all the other dead bodies, because it's, you know, it's not a spoiler alert, you know, but an awful lot of people die in Les Mis, folks, if you're going, take your tissues. So, yeah, I sang one song and then it was over. So that was really weird. to kind of get used to that, you know. What a show to be a part of, and still going phenomenally strong.
Oh yeah, I mean, it is incredible. I mean, Hugh Jackman, I mean, I remember, like, you know, I mean, it just seems to constantly get revived, and it is again one of those, like Blood Brothers, I think, you know, one of those musicals that everybody in the world just knows, you know. It's iconic. I mean, Blood Brothers, yeah. The awards, for me, I think probably one of the most amazing musicals. And the story, Rebecca, I mean, twin boys sort of separated, very interesting story, isn't it, for anybody who hasn't been to see it yet?
And I think that's why, yeah,
a Liverpoolian mom.
Did I
mom.
Give the end away? No, I haven't. Yeah, it's shocking when you do that, isn't it? I have given kind of the end away in Les Mis, but you'll forgive me for that one, folks, but we won't tell you what happens with Blood Brothers. But with the twin boys, I think that's one of the reasons that it was so loved in 1985 when we came here first to the Olympia, and then of course went down to Cork, as you say, in 86, because it was the true story of so many people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they were sitting in the audience watching their story come to life, that they'd had to give a baby away, you know, for whatever reason. Sometimes both babies, I mean, for goodness sake, stories are still coming out now. In fact, down in Cork back in 1986, a woman, she won't mind me telling you this story, I won't give her name away, but there was a young woman who came, and she was having twins, and the guns went off at the end. There's a bit of a spoiler. And they do say that, don't they, actually, on the doors before you go in.
Yes, you're grand.
I'm not going to be in too much trouble, you know.
No problem.
And what happens? The waters break and they dash around to the hospital. She gives birth to twins. She calls them Michael and Edward.
My God.
She comes back to see Blood Brothers 10 years later with the two boys. Then the two boys come back with their children.
Wow.
I've gone through three generations.
That's incredible.
Wow. And that was down in the Cork Opera House in 1986.
You see amazing things happen in that opera house, Rebecca, I'm telling you.
Oh, I know. I caused a lot of them.
Now, talking about amazing things, you told me a story once about someone pulling your hair off for a week off. I mean, you've amazing, I mean, live theatre, of course, is, you know, live, so
yes.
you've had great crack, shall we say, with some things happening, haven't you?
Yes.
With understudies and stuff.
Yes, well, I was telling you about the Fontaine moment, wasn't I?
Yeah.
You know, where Fontaine sells a hair, you know, a teeth and goodness knows what else along the way in this 25 minutes that she's on the stage. But she also has a fight. She works in a factory and she has a fight with the factory girl. And the factory girl in Les Mis, as you all know, you know, you all have understudies because if you get a cold, you know, somebody else has got to play the role. And Fontaine's understudy is the factory girl. So my beautiful friend Susie Fennick was the factory girl, but she was having a 2 weeks holiday break. So her understudy came on and her understudy then becomes my understudy. But we hadn't rehearsed the fight. So Fontaine and the factory girl get on the stage for the first time together. We start fighting. And clearly, you know, she was giving it her all because she wanted to give a great performance. And she this long hair that I had and a wig, she literally got hold of the hair and spun me with my hair like you would, you know, like if you were really having a cat fight. Not that I've ever had one of those. But, and oh my goodness, you know, it's attached to a stretch cap, you know, so it's not very attractive when it comes off, believe me. And off flies the wig and I'm just, I've just got this kind of flesh-coloured stretch cap, so I look completely bald. And the wig flies and the conductor, who is directly in front of us, he catches it with his bat on and there is this Fontaine wig waving around. And it was very difficult to know what to do because it's
a hairy moment, right?
It's quite a serious moment. And then, of course,
the audience wondering, is this part of the show?
Yeah. I'm actually blushing at the thought of it, to be honest. But then, you see, the fight comes to an end and then Fontaine sings, "There was a time when men were kind, when their voices were soft," and I just had this stretch cap on my head and I was thinking, oh my goodness, what do I look like? And there was this wig down there.
Scalped.
He didn't even throw it back up to me, you know, for me to, you know, whack it back on again, you know.
So there was an improv moment there anyway.
But I just carried on regardless, Ed, you know.
The show must go on.
That I
absolutely
am.
Oh, that's brilliant. I mean, do you think she had her eye on the leading role, maybe, with that aggression?
I think for sure, yes. And she never got on. I made sure of that.
You've rubbed shoulders with the famous singers from all over the years, haven't you?
Yeah. Gary Barlow was fantastic in Calendar Girls, you know. I mean, it was amazing to work with him. And he's the man's gifted. We all know that, you know. know, and Tim Firth wrote fantastic script. So I really enjoyed it. I found it a bit daunting. Middle-aged women, you know, taking their tops off, you know. really? Has it come to this? But it was a great role to play, Chris. It was the Helen Mirren part that I played, you know. So it was an honour, you know. It was really great. They have, so far, for blood cancer, they have raised $6.5 million.
Wow, incredible.
That show alone, just from collecting, yeah, you know, out front. Yeah. In the foyer over the past 20 years. So I feel proud of that as well, yeah.
Now, we're going to talk in part three about your upcoming shows, which are very exciting. What have you picked for your second choice of music this evening, Rebecca, for us?
Well, I haven't recorded anything from Letters from the Front as yet. But what I did record during lockdown was a duet with my gorgeous daughter. So I thought I might play that, if that's okay, Ed.
Absolutely, lovely.
So this is a song that we did sing it a long time ago together, but we actually put a recording over. She was in London, I was in Nace, and we sort of, Kenny, my husband, has a studio there. So we recorded them completely separately, and it's just a recording I'm really proud of, so I hope your listeners like it.
I see this world can make you sad. Some people can be bad. The things they do, the things they say. But baby, I'll wipe away those bitter tears. I'll chase away restless fears that turn your blue skies into gray. Why worry? There should be laughter after pain. There should be sunshine after rain. These things have always been the same.
Sunday Show with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to the Sunday Show. That was an absolutely beautiful rendition of Why Worry with yourself and your daughter, Rebecca. Really loved that. Thank really you. Nice. And it was I suppose it was a creative time as well. I know a lot of performers suffered, and like people that worked in travel, I guess, over the pandemic, but it was a time as well to sort of reflect and take time out and be creative, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. You did have that time. And for 40 odd years, I just don't feel like I'd had that time. So we tried to make the best of it. It was heartbreaking in many respects, but there were moments where you just went, wow, you know, you can go in the studio and just think slowly, you know, because so much of life is just so frantic, isn't it?
No, absolutely.
Stopped.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of people actually, there was plus and minuses about the whole thing, but definitely it did give people time to kind of reboot, I think. Now, as in terms of a singer, how do you feel yourself about, when I heard you earlier in the year in Blood Brothers at the Board, gosh, your voice, it sounded to me like it had never changed at all from when I heard you in 1986. Your voice is unbelievable. How does that work? Do you just have to, you have to nurture it and mind it? Do you just keep going until you feel that you are still good?
Yeah, that's my plan. But thank you. That were really kind words. I was really relieved that, yeah, in the concerts, these past few concerts that I've done, I absolutely loved singing better than I have done, I think, probably all my career. I had David Hayes on the piano, who was just so gorgeous to work with. The band were just magnificent. And Mary Lowe and Alison Vard Miller were there with me and doing the harmonies together. Obviously, you warm up and you work at it and everything, and you make sure that the tummy muscles and everything, you're centering yourself. But I was so grateful that when I came to do it, it all came out fine. So yeah, 50 years of singing, but you don't take it for granted.
But it seems almost like, in a way, it's like a good wine. It seems to mature nicely. I wouldn't be an expert on it, though. But it's funny, isn't it? It doesn't. It's not something that necessarily wears out, which is interesting.
No, as I say, I take nothing for granted. Absolutely nothing. And I usually warm up in the shower and stuff like that, you know, and honey and the like. And I did notice when we had lockdown that the muscles, I didn't sing every day. And I noticed how hard it was to actually get back into the swing of it. In the same way that if you don't go to the gym.
Of course.
Which I'm afraid I don't do very often these days. But, you know, if you don't, the muscles don't work, do they? So I'm keeping at it, Ed. I'm going for the 60-year mark.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, listen, you're sounding better than ever. Now, you've a lovely show coming up on the 17th of December. We're going to chat about that, and then we're going to talk about Letters from the Front. But just on the 17th, you're doing a beautiful compilation show, are you?
Yes, I'm looking back 50 years. So one of the first songs that I ever sang, a lot of people associate it with Dusty Springfield, and I think probably the Electric Board, because they used it as an advert on the television on RTE many years ago. But you know that beautiful song, I think I'm going back to the things I learned so well.
Oh, listen, Dusty, I have a soft spot for Dusty.
Oh, me
oh
too,
my God,
100%.
Yeah.
But I don't try and be a Dusty, because who could? Who could ever be a Dusty? But the song was written by Carole King, and I was a huge Carole King fan. We called it that, but that's sort of delving back into 50 years ago. And then going through literally the shows that I've been in, anything that's actually affected my career for one reason or another, or I absolutely love singing. But the one in the Helix on the 17th of December, obviously we're coming up to Christmas, so I'm going to be looking back at a few Christmas songs that I absolutely loved, just to give it that Christmassy flavour. I think a lot of people can get tired of hearing Christmas songs when they're going around the supermarkets and the malls and everything, you know, and they're just saying,
oh, listen, they've started already. It's only early November and they've started already.
Exactly.
I know.
So I'm not going to overkill with the Christmas songs, but yeah, obviously we have to put a few in, so give it a bit of a Christmassy flavour.
Wonderful. And that's in the Helix.
Yes.
Now,
big band and Mary and Ali.
Now, before we talk about Letters from the Front, something that I thought was very interesting, a country that I've been to a good few times, Norway, right? And love it. I saw the Northern Lights up there and Oslo. It's a beautiful place, the fjords. But how did you come to sing at the King of Norway's coronation?
Just phoned me up, Ed.
He just rang you.
He just gave me a call. He said, hello, Rebecca. Will you sing at my coronation? And I said, of course I will, Olaf.
Wow.
No problem.
Yeah, and when was that again? What year was that?
Oh, you've got me now. You didn't tell me you were going to talk about this.
Sorry.
Let me think now. The way it came about was the musical Chess we played for 3 weeks in Olavshallen, which is in Trondheim, way, way up north.
Yes,
in
Trondheim. Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, so we did it there for 3 weeks. And in the course of doing that, of course, you do quite a bit of publicity, you do television and stuff like this. And seemingly his people said, I was there, and before you know it, truly, the phone rang. It was obviously my management, and they said, "You're not going to believe this, but they're actually asking you to sing at the King of Norway's coronation." And I didn't believe it, you know, but ultimately I ended up singing All I Ask of You and Somewhere, and yeah, I think I sang I Dreamed a Dream.
Anyway, wow, amazing. Yes, God, that must have been incredible. And was that at a coronation? We saw Charles recently, King Charles, of course.
They didn't ask me to that one.
No, Charles, he doesn't realise what he was missing. But you've sung for you've done other royal performances as well, haven't you, over the years?
Yeah, I've done a few of those kind of charity lunches, you know. But you don't really like to kind of name drop and thud, do
of course,
you? You know, because it sounds like you're cashing in. And but yeah, I've sung for some really wonderful. No, I haven't sung for Charles. I did sing for Diana.
Yeah.
At a lunch. And I did a royal evening, which I actually organised and semi-directed myself in Newcastle Theatre Royal, which was for a charity. But that was in front... Wait for
that
it.
That was amazing.
That was in front of
Diana.
Prince Andrew. No. Prince Andrew and Sarah. Princess Sarah.
Wow.
So, yeah, but that was many, many years ago. Yeah, so I have very proud of photographs with Frank Bruno and Matisse Redding. And I organised that show and I'm very proud of it. But yeah, Prince Andrew, hey ho.
Well, that's brilliant. Well, anyway, Olaf spotted the real talent, didn't he? He knew.
We'll add that in.
You've the freedom of Norway to this day. Rebecca, the letters from the front, this is very interesting, this show that you've coming up now. And there's a cast of 35, you were telling me.
Yes, 35. They did the first version of it in Kilkenny. They're all based kind of in and around Kilkenny. They're all Irish actors, fantastic talent, and very proud to be a part of it. And Ollie Hennessy wrote the music for it, and he said, if we redo it, would you consider being a part of it? And he said, the mother. And I thought, yeah, once a mother, always a mother, you know, mother in Mrs. Johnson. He sent me the things. I said, what exactly are you sort of asking me to do? Now, it's the German mother, which I was thrilled about, because I thought, if I start to try and do an Irish accent, I know exactly what everybody in Ireland is going to say. And instead of taking me to
so
their
So you
hearts,
thought the German accent would be easier. Is it much easier than the Irish accent?
Exactly. You know, you can get a bit aggressive, can't you?
Yeah. Because there's about 40 accents in Ireland. It just depends which one, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I wouldn't risk it, really, because I know you'd throw me out. At the moment, you can't get rid of me. I'm just
like
a
Tom
penny.
Cruise in Third Away.
Oh, stop. Exactly my point.
Well, that was good. So you're playing a German mother.
I've never tried an Irish accent, Ed. You can say that about me.
Oh, well, don't, because that Yorkshire accent is so lovely anyway.
Do you like it?
The German mother. So tell that. So what is it about? Letters from the front.
It's as it says on the tin.
World War One.
Yeah. Letters from the front. I used to sing a song called The Sunshine of Your Smile. You know, John McCormack.
Beautiful. Oh, wow, yeah, gorgeous.
Yes, exactly. And dear face that holds so sweet a smile for me. And I put it into my concert when Ollie was playing the piano. Oh, it must be about eight or nine years ago. And I told the story, which is a true story, that my grandfather was on the Somme. And he wrote a letter to my then going to be Elsie, my grandma. And he wrote the lyrics to Sunshine of Your Smile on it, so, and sent the letter because he couldn't think of words to say. So I just told this story, and then Ollie said, oh, you know, we've got that, you know, would you sort of be interested, because we've got this musical that we're doing. So it was sort of, he probably thought about me because he'd worked with me and I'd talked about that story. And then he sent me a couple of the songs, and I said, I did German, I think, for about 6 months of school when I was a teenager. And then I have a beautiful friend called Uta, who I was out with on Sunday, who has literally gone through the script with me. So I'm working on my accent.
Well, that's brilliant.
But I don't want it to be too strong.
Well, listen, I saw the Schaubrunden Theatre Group playing Ibsen's Enemy of the People in the Opera House in Belfast in German with English subtitles. Now, this sounds weird, right? But it was It was one of the best performances I've seen. But German, I love the German accent. I'm going to Nuremberg now in Frankfurt. The Christmas markets are, of course, fabulous there, right? Yeah, I love a Christmas market, Rebecca.
You've got a great job.
Yeah, the accents are great, though. I love them. So that'll be enjoyable for you.
Well, I'm not quite
sure. Fräulein Rebecca.
Well, you know, will I do the Marlene Dietrich? Underneath the lantern.
Oh, brilliant. That's another show you could do now. That'd be, I'd love that.
I did that in Hollywood Ladies.
Oh, there you go. Fabulous.
Falling in love again.
Brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah, so, listen, don't pull my accent to pieces, folks, when you come and see. Please do come and see. It's only on for 4 nights.
So November the 21st to the 24th, right?
Yes.
And it's in the O'Reilly. That's a lovely place, the O'Reilly Theatre in Belvedere College. That's a gorgeous spot.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's quite a dramatic piece. They've done a magnificent job with it, with the lighting and all the white crosses. And they're a wonderful young cast. So it's great to be a part of all this young energy. And there's a lot of comedy in it. Because I said to Ollie, the subject matter, obviously, there's a lot of laughs in Blood Brothers. There's going to be a lot of laughs in this. And he said, yeah. So you have to get to know the characters and love them, but without giving anything away. Way, there is tragedy involved as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I would love you all to come and see it because it's great to support a new Irish production. We spent an awful lot of money going to the Bord Gáis to see all these magnificent musicals that come over. But, you know, I'm really proud to be part of something that is absolutely based here. And it's from the Irish point of view. So it's not the English point of view. We've got like a young lady who is the girlfriend of one of the soldiers that goes away and an Irish mother of one of the soldiers that goes away. And I'm from the German point of view. So I have the letters from my son Heinrich. And we write to each other, but she doesn't want him to go. She doesn't believe in war at all. So, and it's quite relevant at the moment, really, in a tragic way, isn't it? That war is just so awful. Folks, come and see Letters from the Front on the 21st of November.
Brilliant. Rebecca, tell us, what have you picked now for your last choice of music this evening?
Well, I'll let you guess, Ed.
Oh, I know. This is just, I better be careful. I'll have a lump in the throat here now. But so, Blood Brothers, of course.
Well, I figured maybe your listeners might want this is a live version of Easy Terms and Tell Me It's Not True. So I've done quite a few studio recordings, but this is one that we did in the Bord Gáis, I think, I don't know, about 5 or 6 years ago. So it's very much a live atmosphere, I think, which I hope brings something different to it. But yeah, I couldn't really sit here for an hour with you without saying I'm singing Easy Terms and Tell Me It's Not True.
It feels like 5 minutes. I could talk to you all day. You're fantastic.
Oh, girl.
Well, Rebecca Storm, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the Sunday show this evening. And now we're going to finish with that beautiful song, Tell Me It's Not True,
Thanks.
Easy Terms.
Loved
Thanks
every
a million.
Minute of it. Bye.
Only mine until the time comes round to pay the bill. Then I'm afraid what can't be paid must be returned. You never ever learn that nothing's yours on easy terms. Only for a time I must not learn to call you mine. Familiar eyes, that face, those eyes make future plans that cannot be confirmed on borrowed time, on easy terms. The price I here.